Hello and welcome to the Treehouse Letter. This is Milan Shatton, your host and producer. And the Treehouse Letter is where we are always learning with a bit of fun. Today's podcast is titled Town Mouse and Country Mouse. And the epigraph for today's letter is The Town Mouse and the Country Mouse, Distress and Agitation of the Town Mouse, from Meditations, Book 11, 22, Marcus Aurelius. The Town Mouse. I am not going to engage with you. Please step forward and order your coffee, the man said to Josh, who moved along the line. Josh had been talking in Spanish to people behind him. Then he turned and tried to talk to this man. Josh apologized, then started talking again. The guy repeated, I am not engaging with you. Step forward to get your coffee. The Gallery Espresso is located on the corner of Bull Street and Perry Street, next to Forrest Gump Park. The town's oldest coffee shop is dark with upholstered furniture, hardwood fireplace, sideboards with vintage tea sets for sale, the kind of furniture where you sink because the springs have gone. It was an historic building, a cozy basement place reminiscent of Beat Poet days, it says on the site. After we placed our order, my son grabbed a chair by the hearth, the five of us hoping to sit together. Not long after we were settled, Josh appeared. Is this seat taken? Then he leapt into our circle and plopped into the vacant chair. Josh's skin is Elmer's glue white, and he was fidgety like a mouse. So, where are y'all from? I'm Josh, by the way. What church y'all go to? You look like good folks, he prattled on. I sipped my brevet. Espresso was steamed half and half. It was warm and creamy. If he paused at all to catch his breath, I nudged him. No church, just visiting, I said. Savannah, your home? Yes, I go to the Greek Orthodox for church. It's next to the German church. Maybe one day there'll be a German Orthodox church. He laughed at his joke. My friends taught me how to fight. Now I get in fights, but I'm really just a marshmallow. I lost a lot of weight, he continued. I need to take boxing lessons, but I mostly read and do research. His sweatshirt did kind of hang on him. What are you reading? I said. Aeolus, he said. I looked at him. Aeolus, Mark, Medications. My adult children were off their phones, watching. Aeolus. It had a familiar ring. Meditations, you mean? By Marcus Aurelius? Yes, he shook his head. He had saintly qualities, Josh said. But he persecuted Christians. He paused, then added, he was noble. Medications, that's good. The way of the times, medicate, I said. My husband found it funny, Josh's title. My oldest fought hard not to laugh, and I could see it in her eyes, in the corners of her mouth. Josh shared all manner of tidbits. I hadn't been in town for years, and my impression was shaped by the book Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, which, for the rest of the country, put Savannah on the map. John Cusack, Kevin Spacey, Jude Law were cast in the film based on the book. The UGA, it's spelled UGA but said UGA, Bulldog, the scandalous art dealer Jim Williams, Lady Chablis, the invisible dog walker. The story is based on real events. It wasn't long, maybe halfway through my coffee, when Josh stood. An older man gave him a hug and asked how he was doing. Josh left us as quickly as he had joined us. Country Mouse. In this passage from Willa Cather's O Pioneers, Alexandra Bergson is the protagonist and farmer who received her father's bequest instead of her brother's, which is highly unusual at the time, to tame the family's wild Nebraska land. Carl Lindstrom is her friend and neighbor who had left for Chicago to become an engraver. Upon his return years later, the two discuss their diverging paths and how the land and surroundings shaped them. What is surprising is Alexandra's pronouncement about Carl's choice after a life of hardship and toil on the prairie. Now I'm going to read you a passage from O Pioneers, The Neighboring Fields, which is chapter 4. And this is also part of my footnotes, the music and prose, to do a close reading of the passage. So as I'm reading it to you, listen to her word choice, rhythm and cadence, and of course the propositions in the writing itself. So here's the passage. "But you show it for yourself, Carl. I'd rather have had your freedom than my land." Carl shook his head mournfully. "Freedom so often means that one isn't needed anywhere. Here you are an individual. You have a background of your own. You would be missed. But off there in the cities, there are thousands of rolling stones like me. We are all alike. We have no ties. We know nobody. We own nothing. When one of us dies, they scarcely know where to bury him. Our landlady and the delicatessen man are our mourners. And we leave nothing behind us but a frock coat and a fiddle, or an easel or a typewriter or whatever tool we got our living by. All we have ever managed to do is to pay our rent, the exorbitant rent that one has to pay for a few square feet of space near the heart of things. We have no house, no place, no people of our own. We live in the streets, in the parks, in the theaters. We sit in restaurants and concert halls and look about at the hundreds of our own kind and shudder." Alexandra was silent. She sat looking at the silver spot the moon made on the surface of the pond down in the pasture. He knew that she understood what he meant. And at last she said slowly, "And yet, I would rather have Emil grow up like that than like his two brothers. We pay a high rent too, though we pay differently. We grow hard and heavy here. We don't move lightly and easily as you do, and our minds get stiff. If the world were no wider than my cornfields, if there were not something beside this, I wouldn't feel that it was much worthwhile to work. No, I would rather have Emil like you than like them. I felt that as soon as you came." "I wonder why you feel like that," Carl mused. "I don't know. Perhaps I'm unlike Carrie Jensen, the sister of one of my hired men. She had never been out of the cornfields, and a few years ago she got despondent, said her life was just the same thing over and over, and she didn't see the use of it. After she had tried to kill herself once or twice, her folks got worried and sent her over to Iowa to visit some relations. Ever since she's come back, she's been perfectly cheerful, and she says she's contented to live and work in a world that's so big and interesting. She said that anything as big as the bridges over the Platte and the Missouri reconciled her. And it's what goes on in the world that reconciles me." And again, that's an excerpt from O Pioneers by Willa Cather. So Alexandra makes the argument that what lies beyond her cornfields makes life worth it, that Carrie Jensen was distraught from the tedium of farm life, doing the same thing over and over, trying to kill herself. After she sees the bridges in the river, she was reconciled to her routine, perfectly cheerful and content, knowing the world so big and interesting. Now, Carl dismisses his sad urban existence as the cost of living near the heart of things, which means having nothing to show but a few square feet, an easel, the landlady and deli owner at your funeral, deception city folk uphold in their sameness, the lack of ties to anything. Freedom, to Carl, means not being missed. Alexandra, for all her years of lonely strife, recognizes and argues that it is the very freedom Carl enjoys that makes her life worth living. And perhaps Carl's youth at the farm provides him solace in his choice to be in the city with thousands of rolling stones. Now, as for me, I live an hour from the city. It's a suburb. Better, it's an exurb. The north edge of my home is bound by a creek, with east and west tucked in by a shallow, well, let's say in winter you see right through to neighboring houses, but it's a shallow row of poplar, brush, and pine. The south edge is an improved road with friends across and just up the lane, which ends at the ridgeline. Now, I need grass and trees, and I like running water and rolling hills, and I just don't have it in me to work any kind of land, garden, or orchard. I am near enough to urban life to see a concert or show, to join the throng of artists and writers and actors, the Rolling Stones at the very heart of things, as Katha writes. Now, I don't go to the city often, but I love knowing it's there. I don't think I could live in the vast, wild expanse of country because I need to be near friends as much as nature. But if I had to, that is a different story. The one of O Pioneers, or pioneers like Alexandra Berkson. Cather, for all of this, her own choice, lived and worked in New York City for much of her life, and she wrote O Pioneers in the City, clearly reconciled to being in the heart of things, as she drew vividly on her formative years out west. In closing, young Josh seems a bit of a town mouse at home among the locals, part of my idea of a cast of Southern characters who comes clearly to my mind when I think of Savannah now. Aurelius describes a town mouse as agitated and distressed, a perspective whose meaning is derived from the existence of the country mouse. Each derives meaning from the other. I met a lot of people over winter break. Distressed or agitated may not be accurate or fair as modifiers go, but Josh stands out for his Gump-like sincerity as he engaged with others, whether they wanted to or not. That's the end of today's letter, but in the footnotes, I have links to the three books, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, as well as the film, Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, with three separate translations of the passage about the town mouse and the country mouse, and kind of a short study on O Pioneers, the passage as music and prose, and a study of the words in the narrative, as well as the Word Nerd special examining the dictionary meanings of exurb, suburb, and burbs. As always, thank you for listening.